Blog Talk Radio.
Blah, 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 blah.
To a new world of gods and monsters.
Hey, a new world, an old world, gods and monsters, huh? All right. Now, one might think maybe I was going to speak about James Whale or Ernest Heisinger, who uttered that quote. Or maybe even Bride of Frankenstein. Everyone knows that's my favorite film, but no! Literal. We're going to talk today about gods and monsters and how they work their ways into the films we love. Horror, sci-fi, and fantasy. I guess mostly fantasy. It depends. Now, I will admit that I am not, all right, well-versed with mythology. Not one bit. It's not something I studied in high school and what little bit of college. I drove by a few of them. I can't say I'm, like, highly educated, but a lot of the films, and especially, you'll note, I lean heavily on my favorite effects man, Ray Harryhausen, because a lot of his films lent themselves to the use of mythological creatures and gods and things like that. So, let's talk about those today, shall we? Where do you start? Well, at the beginning is always a good thing. One of the oldest films that I found that maybe fits this category or fits this topic is a 1920 silent film from Germany called Der Golem, or The Golem in English. And it's about a 16th century Prague rabbi creates this creature made of clay with religious implications. Guy's got the Star of David on his chest, which I believe activates him. I'm not real familiar other than both directed and written by Paul Wegener, who also played the Golem. I haven't seen it yet. I think there's a lot of classic photos out there, and I'm not sure that the versions that are available to me are complete, because it is an old film. Some versions were subject to desiccation and desecration, and hopefully not defecation. But hey, Gar the Ghoul knocking on the door. Come on in,
web,
the Scary House radio show, Gar.
Hey, all right. Of gods and monsters.
Yeah.
Hey.
Mm-hmm.
And what one of the big things about every horror movie, no matter what it is, no matter how bad or good, or they are all morality plays. They really
that
are.
That is true. That is true. I failed to notice that, but yes, they have morals. They have kind of lessons to be learned of good and bad and right and wrong.
And rules. That actually fall into this monster can be destroyed by these rules.
Yes.
Which further supports the God aspect.
You know, you bring up a very, very good point.
Okay, okay, well, that's it. I'm out of here. Bye. No.
All right, thanks a lot, girl. Hey, stop by. Come by again.
Where's
when you can't stay so long.
I lost. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not. Where's my... I lost. Oh, there it is. I knew it was in there somewhere. Where is it? There. All right. There we go. I lost my sound buzzer.
I'm afraid to ask you what that is.
It's something called Mega Mouth, and it's this weird thing. You
Mega
press a
mouth?
Button, and you get all kinds of sound effects, and
hey.
it's just a handheld noisemaker. It's a toy,
okay,
like,
I like it.
Toys R Us. Mega Mouth.
I like it.
Yeah. I have two, and the other one has different sounds. The only thing is I don't know where you'd go to find them, because this is probably made in the 80s or something like that.
Really?
Well, yeah.
That's a crafty little tool and very handy for radio.
It has an expanding, what would you call that? A cone that comes out. And it will also disguise your voice. like my voice needs disguising. Anyway.
I think you have a very
Gods and
voice.
Monsters.
Everyone knows it's you.
Most of the time, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. So, yeah, most of the time they go, that's a garden scene, isn't it? No. It's like, okay, sure. Why not? Ow. I'm still recovering from...
In your youth, would you say, did you first get interested in these kinds of films?
It fell right in place with hosted horror. I didn't realize or have any concept of horror until hosted horror. So that's like 1970.
But I mean, specifically, like these types of films, like your mythology movies, or, did you start with any of the Hercules stuff?
Okay.
Or?
No, that was it was a Harryhausen, Hoosenhausen, that guy. Let me see if I can find it really quick. I got all my DVDs.
Well, I have a feeling you're going to say something similar to my own experience. I think. Jason and the Argonauts was the one that first made me interested. That and Seventh Voyage, because you did have a Cyclops
Sinbad.
In that film.
Yep, Sinbad and the other one you mentioned.
And Jason, yeah.
And Jason,
oh gosh,
those two.
You had, you
and
had
where did
the,
we see them? I saw
huh?
it in a huge theater, big screen. Ooh. It was the matinee
Ooh.
For kiddies in the 70s, okay? I didn't see it on the small screen. I saw it big screen. And, you saw skeletons fighting and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was the Children of the Night or the Children of the Hydra or whatever. And the Hydra is a mythological creature. And again, I think Harryhausen's films lend themselves to those kind of fantastic creatures.
Just amazing. And of course, every one
later,
of them had... Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Every one of them, like I said before, there were rules on how you killed it. It was like how they destroyed the Bronze Man. They cut its Achilles tendon or something, unscrewed it, and the oil came out. I can't remember what happened.
Yeah, one of the Argonauts unscrewed like this thing on Talos's heel.
Yeah.
And I don't know what kind of fluid came gushing out, but he dried up and cracked up and fell apart.
But it was likened to the Achilles, the heel of Achilles. They dipped
exactly.
the baby in, and where they held the fingers, it didn't get the water, and that's where you stabbed him and he died. He bled out from an ankle wound. And I'm like,
that's
really?
True. And there were rules to killing the Medusa, the Gorgon.
Mirror and the reflection.
Yeah, you couldn't look straight at her, you'd turn to stone.
I can't say that.
Yeah, you can. Go ahead.
No, I won't.
I was going to turn it into a dating type comment,
but I wouldn't do that.
You mean like looking at
Everyone
some kind of women
beautiful.
Don't exactly turn you to stone, but parts of you feel like they are maybe turning to stone, or I don't know. At my age, I'm lucky. Well, whatever.
Right. I haven't been that unlucky, so I would be exaggerating, thankfully.
I'm joking. But the Harryhausen films definitely turned me on. And then later, a little bit after the releases of Jason and Seventh Voyage, then you had Clash of the Titans, which brought more of the Greek mythology.
And I missed that film. I did not see that film in its original release. And maybe I saw a truncated version on television.
Ah, I would not miss it. It's a good tale. You know, it's an involved adventure, much like Jason and the Argonauts or Seventh Voyage. You know, there's different facets of the journey and lots of fantastic creatures. There's the interaction between men and the gods. You know, Jason, of course, was called up by the gods to go on his journey. And in Clash of the Titans, there was jealousy from one goddess, and of course, how could we forget one of the most famous lines of all from Clash of the Titans?
Release the Kraken.
Release the Kraken. The Kraken. We've been holding the Kraken back for 45 minutes. Could someone please release the Kraken?
Yes. Yes, but that doesn't seem to wear baggy pants. So make sure we clear on that.
Right. Yeah, that's whole. Mm. I thought it was the seven faces of Dr. Wu, or who was that? One of the images that you tossed up is this creature's got seven heads, and
you
it was Tony Randall.
Yes.
Who was all of these things to include? I think a woman. I don't know.
You're talking about one of my favorite films, and I've mentioned it on the show before. It has great use of mythology. Of course, you've got the one of his incarnations was an abominable snowman.
Oh, okay, yeah.
he played the god Polonius, also, mm-hmm. who was like a fortune teller in Dr. Loew's circus.
Oh, okay.
And then you had Pan, who was tempting Barbara Eden in that movie.
Hello, nurse.
Hello, nurse. Yeah.
Hello, nurse. Yeah.
So absolutely the usage of and I believe the Loch Ness monster appears in it too. So there's a great use of mythology.
Great use of mythology, and we have to tip our hat to the acting chops of a Mr. Tony Randall on that.
Oh
right?
My gosh, yeah, playing all those different roles. It was
right.
a lot of fun. And did you catch near the end of the film, spoiler alert, but Tony Randall appears as himself briefly in a crowd scene.
Like, looks like my cousin. Yeah.
Yeah, so technically he played eight different roles.
Eight different roles, yeah.
Yeah.
This is like, wow.
And although not to any known mythology, at least to me, I loved his characterization of the star character, Dr. Loew. He was cool.
And I don't know how they captured the look of taking a Caucasian male and turning him into an Asian old man. Just
yes.
Wow. Wow.
Shades of Lon Chaney Sr.
Yeah, or who was that guy? Gerald K. Nash in the old Batman serial where they turned him into a Japanese spy, Dr. something. Can't
yeah.
Remember.
And those actors were very versatile. They'll play those different types of roles, of the different, the different characters from different, like you said, from different races. That's hard to do.
Oh yeah, Eddie Murphy, didn't he play a white guy somewhere? Anyway, but back to
girl,
gods and monsters. There was yeah. A lot of these things, like I said, they have rules, and I don't know where they came up with the rules. I don't know if it's lore and legend or what came up with. Like I said, I've seen a lot of some Asian films, and in Asian films, either vampires or zombies, one of the two, I can't remember. It's a combination of either vampires, zombies, or ghosts. Can't walk, they have to hop. I think it's zombies.
Okay.
They can't walk, they have to hop. And
that helps when you're running full tilt.
because there was a scene I saw where these people are being pursued by the dead, but they can only do these little bunny hops, and it's like,
okay.
What's going on here?
I'd have a hard time not laughing at him. If that were to really
happen. I didn't say it wasn't funny. I was, just, but
yeah.
That was what they said. You know, they have to hop. And then another thing that I didn't see reflected in American and or UK films was in Asian lore about vampires is that they cannot cross a moving body of water. And then all of a sudden, this is also applied in a Christopher Lee is Dracula Hammer film where he gets trapped under the ice, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. So all of these
everybody
these
head
rules.
For the islands.
Yeah, I know. And you know, you would have figured Drac might have just at this point in time turned into a bat and flown away, but instead, oh, the ice is cracking, I must go under.
So I don't know.
And then recently in The Strain, I don't know if you've been following this television program about an even more different type of vampire that's taken over New York called The Strain. Have you heard of this TV show? In this, vampires cannot move. They need help to move over running water. Again, they needed help to cross a bay.
You know, when you brought this whole concept up of these rules for defeating him and stuff, and I mean, I think sometimes in the films they're merely plot devices, but in the case of actual mythology, I wonder if they don't, when these mythoses are created, if it's not, there has to be a way for good to overcome evil. So, you know, whatever it is, garlic for vampires, which are, they are part of lore and mythology, I think, as well as werewolves and living mummies. You know, they come
from, I think,
from
it just saves more pizza for us, but maybe.
Yeah, there you go. And I do likes my pizza.
I did. We're going to put on my no-no list, but there are all of these devices to render the monster no longer a threat. And a lot of them do rely on the God aspect, that there has to be a strength that can overwhelm this evil. And it's also, like you said, a plot device, because you have antagonist, protagonist, and there's a battle, and then there's a conclusion. And they have, you know, they can't just let it run forever.
Now, you'll notice some of these films, they sort of stray from mythology as it was originally written, like in the Jason and the Argonauts movie. I really don't believe in Greek mythology that Hercules ever interacted with Jason. He had his own adventures and trials and tribulations, being half god and half human. But that was cool, kind of, that he, especially his relationship with the one young sailor who idolized him, and in Jason and the, you know, the old Harryhausen Jason and the Argonauts. I haven't seen I'm afraid to see that. I love the Harryhausen so much. I'm afraid to see the remakes of Jason and Clash of the Titans.
You have to view each one as its own entity and not and almost not compare the two.
I would have a hard time with that.
You just recently we were talking, I think I was talking with you, and we were talking about the guy comes down, Klaatu Nikto Barada. The remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, please.
And the remake, the big robot, one, he's huge. He's like King Kong. And then the other thing is he dissolves into dust and is going to, like, turn into nanobots and eat everything on the planet. Such a far variation from the 50s film of the same title. And so they have to be viewed, in my opinion, viewed as their own entity. Can I use that word on here? entities everywhere.
Watch those multisyllabic words there, pal.
I try.
People accuse us of being edumacated.
Edumacated? Yeah.
Yeah, we can't have that.
Yeah. So you've got the gods, and one of the weird things about the gods, if you go back into mythology, and which would later revisited onto film as these people were starting out and creating all of this great stuff. Like you mentioned the Golem. I think the Golem was one of the I enjoyed the film, but I also saw where if it was sped up or if things were changed, it could be really funny. However, you cannot really joke with the Golem aspect because it's so strongly entrenched by believers and followers of certain understandings, you know. This is like don't mess with our Golem, you know. And it was like, cause
I would assume that some Egyptians might be offended by the American movies of the Mummy.
Could be. It's a desecration of their dead.
Was it you that I was talking to recently and we were discussing? Because, I mean, depending on your belief set, one person's religion is another person's mythology. So, and we were talking about
right.
whoever it was, and I think it was you. We were talking about the religious aspects and the Christian symbolism and with some of the early, especially the Universal classics.
Yes. I made mention of. I think it's so humorous, and this is isn't really religion, but it sort of is. Okay, so like. They have these programs out. They've had them for the past 10 years now of ghost hunters of all kinds of different names of their different. And they'll start to visit. They start visiting the United Kingdom. They go to Germany. They go to all these different away from the U.S. And they're supposedly in contact with these century-old dead people as ghosts and entities. But they speak English, and they feel that if there is a demon, that that demon, wherever it is, they will call in a demonologist, and that everything that is on the face of the earth that could be considered a demonic thing has to play by the rules of whatever the demonologist was taught. And I don't know where you get a demonologist degree, but
well, it's a demonology bookstore, of course.
I guess so. Here's $10. I will print you a certificate today.
I don't know how that works.
But yeah,
by the way, we've got two wonderful, at least, live listeners, two people in the chat for sure. Evil Annie Reppert and the Movie Man, and the Movie Man writes in the chat. This is for your benefit, sir.
Oh, okay.
Clash of the Titans is going to be on next Saturday night at 10 p.m. Of course, you'll be on the air, so maybe you can't watch it, but maybe you could DVR it on Turnick Classic Movies.
Oh,
It's a stop-motion animation block sandwiched between the original King Kong and 1 million years B.C. at 12 a.m. Eastern. Ooh.
Unfortunately, I don't have cable, I don't have a TV, and I'm injured, and I can't... I won't be broadcasting for another 2 weeks.
Ooh.
So, I fell and almost broke my rib, but instead I bruised it and
this would have been your opportunity
to limit my laughing.
Well, that's not a funny movie.
Giggle.
The Movie Man wanted you to know that because that way you could have got your wish of seeing Clash of the Titans.
I could have. Well, what I'll have to do is probably because I don't think it's very cost prohibitive is just pick up a DVD somewhere, toss it in the old computer here, and see
there
what
you
comes
go.
Out.
That's good stuff, man. Get the original. There's the great Ray Harryhausen animation, and it's a good story. There's different mythology stuff mixed in, and there's some cute humorous stuff in it, but nothing no gut ripping. Rib busting
right.
kind of humor, but
I found out I don't bounce like I used to.
Yeah, none of us.
There was a bounce, and then a snap, and then that hurt.
See, in my case, it's like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. You know, the abominable snowman, Bumbles bounce.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. This Bumble didn't bounce as well as he should.
Oh, man, I'm sorry to hear that, and I hope you mend quickly.
I'm a week out and I'm still having some problems, but they say 2 more weeks and I'll be fit as a fiddle in a coffin, whatever that
perfect. There's another early German film that deals with mythology, and it's called... The Nibelung or something, Nibelungen, something like that, with Siegfried. And there's dragons and stuff, and it's very well done for a 1924 movie.
That one I'll have to go look up.
The Nibelungen, Siegfried.
I remember a film called Vampire.
Vampire with a Y.
Yes, with a Y, and that is like really strange.
Yes.
And it probably also had a few touches of the things that will save you would be religion. I'm not really sure. But that, of gods and monsters.
Well,
anytime
I think you get into vampires when holy water or crosses trouble them.
Exactly.
I think even the werewolf has, at least in written lore. I don't know so much about the films, but it has some religious implications as well.
If you understand this, and I'm not saying it is, I'm not saying it isn't, but what's been relayed is that silver is considered a pure metal. Hence, you're looking at like chastity, virginity, purity. And
I know
the
nothing
only thing
of those
that will kill a werewolf. I'm sorry, what?
Chastity, purity. I know nothing of those things.
Yeah. Well, it's been a long time, you know. I
don't remember.
Yeah. But so anyway, the thing that will destroy this monster is actually a symbol of purity as it is interpreted in what is your god figures of all ilk are the purity of love and, you know, and
you have
everything.
A computer, don't you?
Do I? I do.
Yes. Good. Evil Annie Repard comments in the chat.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That they're pretty sure that you can watch Turner Classic live
okay.
from their website. So
well, there we
you'll
go.
Get to see
people are really trying to convert me to a TCM. Turner
well,
Classic
no, not
movie
so much
channel.
That. I mean, no.
Yeah,
no,
right.
I mean,
no.
Horror people and horror fans, for by and large, for the most part, like to share.
Right.
And I think this is a film that we would like you to see.
It is on
We're
my docket.
We're hypnotizing you.
You are feeling better. Your name is Popcorn. You will send me $20. Yeah, okay. Right? Is that no? No.
Release the
Kraken. Evil release. Kraken. Release that darn Kraken. That Kraken needs some crackers.
Sometimes I say that.
Evil Annie Rippert, thank you so much. And the Movie Man, thank you as well for your for information so I can get groovy on this movie.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, that was
a groovy
that
movie.
That was totally unintentional. Okay. your vampires, they are tied to all of these rules. Now, this was something curious that some might get a kick out of. I ran across a vampire movie once, and someone held up, they took two pieces of something and they put them together. And said, it's a cross, you have to back away. And they were like, nah, man, that only works if you believe in it. And
yeah.
There was a Jewish person in the room, and they pulled out their Star of David and says, I believe. And the vampire backed away.
Well, I wonder, I always wondered if there was a Jewish vampire, would you have to use a Star of David, and what would you use for other cultures?
It's more about the faith and belief and strength of love, and I keep doing that, but that is what will destroy the evil, love, and but if you don't believe, then, that's like, I can't come up with a good analogy.
That's right. That's why I can't be hypnotized. I really have trouble. Either that or I'm a control freak and I just won't give my will in. But an interesting wrinkle of what you mentioned about believing and so forth. There's that scene in the remake of The Mummy, the one with Brendan Fraser.
Right.
Where Benny, the weaselly little antagonist, you know, a minor antagonist in the film, he was cornered by the zombie, and he was showing him various religious symbols to either ward him off or show him that he's a friend, you know. One or the other, he just wanted to get out of the mess with the mummy. And
right.
He was showing him like an ankh, you know, an Egyptian ankh, and a cross,
right.
and a Star of David, and That's when that was a symbol that the mummy recognized was the Star of David, because there were Jewish slaves in Egypt at the time.
I wish I had better memory, but I don't. Someone mentioned in the movie man mentioned the Fearless Vampire Killers, and is that the one with the husband of was Sharon Tate in that?
Polanski? I don't think so.
Maybe that's the Fearless Vampire Hunters, Fearless Vampire Killers. There's a movie that was made. I think it was in the 60s, and it is just terrific how amazingly. I wish I had better words. My words are failing me because it's such a good film. It's this very old doctor guy that knows how to defeat vampires, and his youthful companion, and they're on the trail of a vampire, and it's just hilarious. It's more humor than it is. It doesn't have a laugh track, thankfully, but there's so much humor in it. It's just wow.
The movie man does comment that both Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski were in Fearless Vampire Killers.
There you go. Okay, so I was right.
You were
on
right.
That. Yeah,
you were right on.
And that is one near and dear to my vampire heart, but I don't have a vampire heart. There you go.
There's that word.
Yeah. Yeah, you got it. It's all about the love. One is storytelling. The other is having these rules to overcome such a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And how monsters can wiggle worm away from these things. Like I said, with the, well, you don't believe in it, so, you know, it's not that effective.
What if you got an atheist vampire? Then you're stuck. You're done.
I know. Well, that's when you just go whoa, and then it works. I don't know.
See,
because that's unconditional. You don't.
Has been done in two films. You could play maybe very bad music, like in Killer Tomatoes and
Killer
Mars
Tomatoes.
and Mars Attacks.
Yeah. Oh, Killer Tomatoes. Wow. there's no copyright, and there's no sect of a religion that has copywritten the love. So, and if people would stop bickering about all the differences, they'd see that there's more likeness than there is not likeness. Gosh, I cannot. I wish. Where are my words today? I don't know. Sometimes I can go and sometimes I can not. If we started to recognize our similarities instead of our differences, we would understand that we are more the same than we are not. And it's that similarity that should bring us together instead of repel us and go, I'm not the same as you.
Isn't that funny, though, how a lot of the films that we like are based around conflict and the misunderstandings. What makes a monster a monster? I guess it's the majority's perception, perhaps, of someone or something that is very, very different.
If you watch the original Frankenstein, the first one, the 26 or whenever it was made?
31, Karloff?
31, thank you, okay.
Yeah.
That one. Yeah, I think that there was an empathy to the viewer. You're seeing something being tortured with fire and chained. You're seeing all of this stuff. And possibly towards the end of the film, maybe there was empathy and sorrow for the misunderstanding. No one sat down and said, okay, let's start with some fundamental language exercises. Let's work with some morality basis. Let's set up some guidelines here. And let's turn this guy into a functional. You know, maybe he could have turned into a great.
Had that chance in Bride of Frankenstein when he met the old hermit, but unfortunately the villagers chased him out And then
exactly.
he fell in with Dr. Pretorius. You know, with this conversation went full circle of gods and monsters, right?
Yes,
but,
exactly.
Dr. Pretorius used him for bad things and taught him revenge and coercion and other bad things. I mean, I've always had this theory that the only way to unify everybody on the earth, and this was done in a short story, by the way, by creating a false enemy that's so different and so hideous that everybody agrees to hate it, and that's... You know what I mean? There was a story, a short story once, I've mentioned before on the show, that this guy decided he wanted to unify the world and created a phony threat. And in doing so, he became a worldwide villain because he also told this threat that he was going to give all the Earth secrets and disappear. And so he removed himself from humanity pretty much, went and lived as a hermit. While the rest of the world thought he betrayed them, and they were preparing for an attack that never came, but it unified the planet.
The threat of something that is beyond us, and that is typically any monster, but also aliens. Mm-hmm.
Correct.
That's where we have to sit down and go, you know, it'd be in our best interest if we worked together.
Yes.
You get a pitchfork, you get a pitchfork, you get a pitchfork, you get a torch, you get a torch. You know,
I wanted a pitchfork.
everybody gets a pitchfork, right?
Don't I get a rake or a shovel? Come on.
Like Oprah.
There's always one guy. There's always that one guy. No, but maybe isn't it sad that that's what it would take? To unify people is again a common fear or hatred,
right? Well, and we don't question anger, we don't question hatred, we don't question biases and how they're formed and why we keep them and how they make us point at the other guy and say that's not us, you know. And then there was that one guy that said, I have seen the enemy, and he is us. You know, it's like.
And you know who had a lot to say about that? Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, poison doesn't always come in bottles, and it isn't always marked with the skull and crossbones of danger. Poison can take the form of words and phrases and acts, the venom of racial and religious hatred. Here in the United States, perhaps more than ever before, we must learn to recognize the poison of prejudice and to discover the antidote to its dangerous effects. Evidences of racial and religious hatred in our country place a potent weapon in the hands of our enemies, providing them with the ammunition of criticism. Moreover, group hatred menaces the entire fabric of democratic life. As for the antidote, you can fight prejudice, first by recognizing it for what it is, and second by actively accepting or rejecting people on their individual worth, and by speaking up against prejudice and for understanding. Remember, freedom and prejudice can't exist side by side. If you choose freedom, fight prejudice.
Well said, huh?
There you go. Kudos to him. Excellent word choice. There were also other mythologies, maybe not as horrific as a vampire or werewolf or mummy, even when you had knights versus dragons. And
yes.
Nobody sat down and said, hey, dragon, what's going on? You know, what's your deal? Because for some reason you like taking gold and grabbing our women. What's going on? You know.
Well, again, I think there's religious, at least from the European aspect of dragons, maybe not so much the Asian aspect of dragons, but in the European version, sometimes Satan himself was represented as a dragon, St. George killing the dragon.
Okay. There you go.
I think religion and mythology in some aspects, depending again on your viewpoint, with no disrespect meant to anyone, a religion or a mythology creates these fantastic creatures that lend themselves to exciting stories.
Because it supports the story. It supports the morality, and it shores up the strength of the direction that these people want to go in. I mean,
and it might not even be about good. It might not even be about good and evil. Sometimes the gods call upon some of our heroes to do some adventure or tale or something that they have to accomplish is part of the story, and you know.
Yeah, like the Golden Fleece thing. It's like,
yeah.
Can't you guys get your own? There's only one, and you can't get it? Why are you sending me here?
Yeah, what kind of god are you?
You know,
get it yourself.
Like, wow.
I'm watching football.
Yeah. Wait, you want me to leave all my friends, family, women, folk, all this, to go and risk my life for a sheepskin?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I do. Please do this
that
now.
That would be great, to have the gods sit around like the mafia. Wouldn't that be cool? Yeah, I do. You go over there with Ben. Guido's going to go with you. You go get the Golden Fleece there and then bring him back.
That's right. You do this for me, I'll do something for you in the future there. Right.
And we'll leave your brother Fredo alone, you know, and then we don't have to try to beep, bada boop, and then it's all done.
And so when I finish talking to you, you know what happened? Get out of here. That's what.
Yeah.
You know.
I want you to bump off this Hydra thing.
Yeah.
That thing's starting to bug me.
This guy's been a pain in my neck for so long.
I sent Luca Brasi. He never came back. I don't know.
Yeah. Ow.
Yes.
Damn, ribs. Mm. Okay. Sorry. Pardon me. I will have Tourette's. I'm sorry if there's pain.
Do you ever wonder where some of these mythologies originated, though, with these gods and fantastic creatures?
Very easy to answer. All of mythology stems from early man's best attempt to explain nature.
Ah.
I should really
Fair
go
enough.
Now. I've said way too much.
Yeah, you've enlightened us all. Thank you very much, Professor Gar.
All right.
No, I think you're onto something there because obviously.
I was just reading
off
the back of a pack of matches.
Early man did not have the understanding of physics and astronomy, so he used astrology and a great imagination, I would think, to explain the marvels of the world.
Lightning strikes and hits a tree, and it turns to flame. Is that not the finger of God? To early man, it's the finger of God. To a meteorologist, we've got some positive electrons, we got some negative electrons. They kind of meet in the middle. There's a bang, you know. There you go.
Bada bing, bada boop, and we're
bada bang,
again.
Bada bang.
All right.
Yeah. So, finger
welcome
of God.
Welcome to Erie House.
So,
that was almost the Lawrence Welk Italian guy. Wonderful, wonderful. Welcome to my eerie house.
I tell you, we're going to have some fun today. I love that
and now
guy. I only
sisters,
love that guy when I got old.
Song. Yes. And
when I was young,
sisters.
I didn't. Yeah. When I was young, I didn't really get on with Lawrence Welk. As I got old, I was like, this is some great stuff.
Oh, God. Those old shows like Ed Sullivan and the variety of acts
Ow.
And things they had was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
almost
and,
like
and, yeah.
It was almost mythological in nature. It was so good.
Jacques Cousteau and Lawrence Welk, two mythologies in our lifetime. Right?
Yeah, you and I are roughly the same age, and do you remember in the early 70s where you got the Thor Heyerdahl, the Ra expeditions, where they tried to explain kind of why there's pyramids in both Egypt and in South America, and that it was possible to make a boat of reeds and travel across the ocean, that they may have interacted and they may have influenced, the two cultures may have influenced each other.
When they start and then later, many, many years, decades later, we find out that there is information that, hey, these people did have conversations. when you look at Japanese culture and you look at Chinese culture, you're like, wow, there are similarities, but they are so different. And yet then later you learn that the Japanese actually were once Chinese. It's like, wow, really?
Yeah.
And
well, sure, if you go far back enough, a lot of the cultures shrink
exactly.
down to certain origins.
Right. And
they share some of the mythos. I believe Japan has dragons as well as China.
I know more of the Chinese mythology than I do of Japan. I just got like a little teeny, you know, read this one sentence. Okay, that's all we're going to talk about Japan. When I was in college many moons ago, but the emphasis was on China more than Japan back when I was taking that course. So I didn't really get, but yeah, if you look at the language of the two, you've got a lot of characters that look very similar, and they mean nothing the same at all. So it's very confusing.
You just brought up a horrible thought to me.
Okay.
Well, I kind of feel bad for the Asian cultures with their writing system.
Mm-hmm.
How the heck would they do the YMCA?
Hence stemmed the beginning of acrobats.
And yoga, yes.
And yoga, yeah.
We explain it all here on Erie House. Between Gar and I, we can explain off anything.
That's it. except it would come off. I wonder what YMCA is in Chinese.
I don't know, but it would be very hard to duplicate with your hands and arms.
Really, it'd be, I don't know.
How the hell? How the hell would they do that? Yoga.
Chinese acrobat theater. That was. This is where Tai Chi and Kung Fu came from. They were trying
there
to do the
go.
YMCA movement. Yeah.
That we know how it all fits and works together.
That's it. yeah. Okay. So I am tasked to see the Clash of Titans. You, sir, are tasked to see the Fearless Vampire Killers. That was directed by Roman Polanski.
Challenge accepted. Challenge accepted.
Okay. And then at some point in the future we'll talk and you're going to go, that was a funny movie. And I'll go, it was. Oh, it's just so. And I want to say that the ethnicity of the people, and I could be wrong, I thought that they were Russian Jewish in there, the way they spoke and all the things he had going on. And it was very weird that they had vampires going on there. It was very frigid, ice and snow everywhere throughout the entire film.
Isn't it funny how culture is so different, such as the Asians versus the Europeans? They both had vampires in their mythology.
They all, yeah, there is. Well, I think, you know, once
the
you
fear
get,
of the dead returning, you know, it's something universal about that, I imagine.
Once you have in-laws, you understand that vampires don't necessarily have fangs. did I say that?
Yes.
Anyway.
In-laws,
so
outlaws.
There's a truism across humanity, and that there are beings out there that will draw your energy from you, whether it's through blood or just please
marriage.
Leave me alone. And you know,
through blood or marriage, one or the other. Oh God! Oh, suck the life out of you. And
they suck the
all.
Life right out of yeah. So
and unfortunately, that's all. But
but you digress.
I digress.
You digress.
No, it's funny how, though, a variety of cultures, in fact, we'd probably be hard-pressed to find any that did not have some sort of fear of the dead rising or,
death
you
is
know,
the
returning
big one.
In some way.
Death is the big one because it's a mystery that no one can answer. It lends so well to every monster, every creature, everything that will ever come to be is going to be wrapped around the finger of death. Okay?
Yes.
It's a mystery we can't solve. And again, going back to a very unscientific early man attempting to understand nature.
Mm-hmm.
He looks over and goes, "Hey, Bill, why don't you wake up? Hey, Bill, there's something going on. You're missing it. Bill hasn't woken up in 4 days. I think there's something wrong with Bill.
That was great when you took on that saber-toothed tiger, Bill, but
but
you
got to
get up now and celebrate with us.
Yeah. So,
Bill. Bill.
So, and he just never came back, and you go, all right, what now? Bill seems to be decomposing before my eyes. So maybe we should bury him.
Yeah.
The reason for burial has nothing to do with religion. I think it's just to get rid of the stink. Okay. All right. So,
well, that in later years for health reasons, because
they didn't understand health back then. It was just, man, this guy really stinks.
Yeah.
You're talking like your primitive man.
Kind of ripe. We got to do something.
You know, we live here, and look at the fly situation. You know, it's there is a sacred aspect as man has progressed through all kinds of different cultures. There has progressed a sanctity of life and a curiosity and fear and protection against death. Probably what has promoted the medical field so much to try to keep us alive.
Oh, please, don't get me started with those guys.
I won't.
You want to talk about blood-sucking vampires?
There you go. So,
right up there with lawyers, you know?
Yeah. So we have these archetypes that are being used to relay our monster stories. And they're big. And it's what keeps us compelled and wanting to watch more. Hmm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me personally, having gone through some difficulty as a youth, I may or may not have mentioned to you personally before, but I was an adopted lad.
Did you say youth?
Youth.
What is a youth? No, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Youths.
Youths.
Youths. No.
And what is that you're wearing, sir?
As a youngin', it was very important for me to watch these films as a way to overcome personal fears, that monster that lived under your bed or in your closet or both, if you're me.
Right.
And when you made it through to the end of a horror film and you were relieved, and maybe you were aided by your favorite horror host.
Exactly.
In getting through the movie, that was like a passage. That was like, you earned a badge of honor. You've earned a stripe or some such passage into overcoming a fear.
Exactly. I wish I had earned such a reward at the end. I just remember that these things scared me. But what was fun was the host. The movie still terrified me to this day. When seeing them as an adult, I go, "What were you afraid of?" But inside, in the back of my brain, there is still that one part that says, this is when you watched it then, and it went woo-hoo-hoo to you.
Yeah.
And it still does. So.
And it's very much like a roller coaster ride. We go on them because they're scary. We watch these movies because they're scary.
What did we want? Well, at least on this side. What I wanted to see the monster. And then it scared the heck out of me. But I wanted
for
to.
For me, it was like, I do want to see it, and I don't. And you're
yes.
You know what? It's almost like a terrified woman who covers her face, but yet her fingers are clawed and open, so she can see through them to see what the hell she's afraid of.
Exactly. I don't want to see it, but you know, I got to tell this again on Oprah, so I got to see.
We tease ourselves to some degree, I think, just like with a roller coaster, you know. I know, I'm going to be safe. It's on rails, but whoa! Whoa!
Yeah. One thing that, Maybe in the 70s. I think maybe in 65 or 70 it stopped. Maybe then. There used to be a formula of, you're gonna be entreated to a monster movie. It's got a beginning, it's got a middle, it's got an end, and there's closure. And then right down in 64, 65, all of a sudden, did it die?
Yeah.
Did they conquer it? You know, is it lurking in your basement? You know, are all your lights on in your house? You didn't know because they started to leave the endings open instead of before, and it was beginning, end, middle, everything's okay. The end. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it was the end question mark. And then you didn't see the words the end anymore.
You just saw the question mark.
Yeah, you just, you know, no, you felt the claw on your back. It was like, I am dead.
It had been done in the 40s and even in the 30s where you thought Frankenstein monster was killed and he keeps coming back.
He can't, yeah, right.
But
they did have a the end
played
there.
It up, yeah, I don't think they played it up like they do today.
No.
Well, and starting in the 50s, as you mentioned, particularly with horror and a lot of your sci-fi films, your post-apocalyptic movies. Is this the end?
Is
maybe
it?
Not.
Yeah. And 65 for me is a cutoff because that's when they started to go to the butcher shop and get as many animal intestines as they could and show it on film and buckets of red paint. And they made it more of a shock and not
shock
as much
value.
Of a monster. They changed horror.
Yes. And maybe it's good. Maybe we did learn something about not being prejudicial about the way someone or something looks. I think as a race, for the most part, sure, there's problems, there's difficulties, and unfortunately they're exaggerated by the media. But I think we're learning to understand and be more accepting of differences than we as a race have been, that there's always going to be exceptions, there's always going to be intolerant people. But I think things are on the whole getting better. You know, this is normally the time, Gar, that I say, hey, guess what's on Erie House TV? Well, still nothing. it's going to be a slow process. We will return. I'm not sure with what venue yet.
Right.
Still plunking around with a few ideas and trying to do it in an affordable fashion.
But I
will make every effort.
What I had
to
offer wasn't something that would fit.
Hmm?
You and I had talked about that you were looking for, and unfortunately what I had to offer doesn't fit because it requires so much constant attention. You can't walk away for, it really is like live TV.
It's like being married again.
that again. Here we go. There you go. All right.
Boingy, 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 boingy.
Boingy, boingy, boing.
So what would be on our way out here with 2 minutes left in the live part portion of our broadcast? Of course, we can chat a little further if you like.
Sure.
After the live portion is over for the folks that want to listen in the archive. But what would you say your favorite area of mythology to be used in film is? You personally, Gar.
Oh, wow. Wow, you stymied me with that question.
Well, at least I didn't spanky you.
The Greek mythologies are a great source. But there aren't any vampires or there are a lot of monsters in there, but there aren't necessarily the archetypes that we've come to fall back on, the werewolves or the vampires.
Agreed. I'd have to say that the Greek and Roman mythologies really fit the genre of fantasy more so than bona fide straight up horror.
Right.
Your vampires, your werewolves, your mummies, those mythologies I think are more of the more aligned to horror. So with 30 seconds left or so, real quick, thank you to the Movie Man and Evil Annie Repert for joining us in the chat. And for the lovely urgings of the the chatters to help Gar get a chance to see Clash of the Titans. That
Clash
pretty much
of the
does
Titans.
It.
That's right.
Huh? Yes.
The Clash of the Titans. Yeah, I'm going to check that out.
If you ever had your Titans clash, you know how painful that can be.
Yeah, that's, I got. That's when I decided to, you know, did maybe smaller
Thanks,
underwear was better.
Thanks, listeners, for listening to Eerie House Radio.
There we
Bye-bye.
Go.
Bye bye. And we're in the archives now.
We're in the archives. Yeah.
The bonus time, if you will.
There was a word. In 1965 and forward, when they started with what I mentioned before about animal parts and buckets of red paint, they were desensitizing us. They shocked
yes.
us, but then we got desensitized. And
no, and they had to escalate.
I can roll that forward to, okay, so the evil, what is it, The Walking Dead? The Walking Dead's coming on. Oh, great. Let me go get something to eat and I'll watch it. And it's like, really?
Yeah.
You know, pizza, yay! Let me watch it. They destroy zombie heads and stuff and I'm eating. Or that other, what was it called? Blood something. New Blood? True Blood. True
yeah.
Blood? Do you remember that?
True Blood.
That was like incredibly graphic, just splatters of all kinds of stuff everywhere, you know.
I'll
and
watch
people...
some of those. I get a huge kick out of the two Rob Zombie films, House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects, which are both unnecessarily violent and gory.
Right.
But there's a dark humor side to it that I find absolutely fascinating. And I do like Rob Zombie's music and his use of classic rock in Devil's Rejects. But by and large, I'm far more attracted to the old black and whites where, you know what I mean, the use of graphic violence and gore was not necessary.
Remember I wish that I had a better grasp of these things. I can describe the film, but I can't remember the title. It was like not disenfranchised, it's a head. It's a woman's head in a pan, and she talks.
Dan, in the pan, you're talking about The Brain That Wouldn't Die.
The Brain That Wouldn't Die. Okay.
My favorite public domain film.
There is a scene in there where the monster thing that was behind the door gets out and tears people from limb to limb, and there's when they finish the whole lab, the walls are smeared with, you know, whatever. And it could have been
yeah.
brown paint. It didn't matter. It was in black and white. But to me, I'm like, whoa, we're seeing a whole lot of gore here, which you really weren't, but, you know.
That was over the top for its era. That was actually an early 60s film. I think it was shot in 61 but not released until 63, something like that.
Right.
Yeah, they had the fellow with the deformed arm, and his good arm was torn off by the monster in the closet, and that's when
yeah,
he smeared
yeah, yeah.
the walls. With
yeah.
that, they didn't really show much with the decapitated head, but it was kind of humorous how he was holding it in his jacket and running like he was holding a football.
Yeah. yeah.
But
classic stuff, but. Mm.
But yeah,
I
think the one scene you're referring to is when the monster in the closet bit the doctor's ear off or a portion of his neck or something like that.
Right, right, yeah.
And then shook the bloody part at the camera. That was kind of cute.
Yeah.
That was nice.
And I put a criteria on the stuff that I show, that it's not going to have gore, no splatter, no slasher, no nudity, and no profanity and stuff. You know, so I'm really limiting what is being shown, but there's a large number of films that fall within that criteria, and it's still good horror.
Oh, absolutely.
The Head That
yeah.
Wouldn't Die, I've shown it, and I apologize. I go, this one's a little bit rough, people.
Yeah. And there's also a version, by the way, and I'm not sure the details of it. There is a version, as you know, in that film. He goes to a couple strip clubs looking for bodies for this disembodied head.
Right. Right.
And in one version, he visits the one stripper, and she's topless with these photographers, and they're taking pictures of her topless.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a well-known or often seen version, but there is a version out there that So that must have been shot that way. Further, there were pictures. There was this one site. It's gone now. It used to be called Giants and Girls. And the monster in that film, there's a still of him with one of the strippers. Remember the two girls that got into a fight? You know, that chick fight?
Right.
The brunette was topless in this picture with him. So it made me wonder what was going on while they were filming that.
Yeah, exactly. There was a director's cut. Nobody
got. Girls want to make a movie?
Yeah. Well, here's a question. Do you remember this film? It was in the 80s. And, oh, no, wait. Let me do this. Because the guy is like a cult guy now, actor. Let's see.
Tell me
Jeffrey
what you remember,
Combs.
Maybe.
Jeffrey Combs. Uh-huh. Jeffrey Combs was in the movie Reanimator and Bride of the Reanimator. And do you remember there
yes.
was a certain aspect in those films where he got the head of his mentor and
mm-hmm.
it was in his lab or something like that? And
yeah.
they later put bat wings on it or something and it flew around?
Oh,
I think that was maybe a nod to the head that wouldn't die. Because it was a head. It was a head. It had. And that was another thing, is the amazing suspend your belief. Okay, there are no lungs. There's mm-hmm. nothing to allow it to breathe, to speak.
But it does.
But it does, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a head, you know. Yeah, it doesn't have flow to. There's no, like, it was just clamped in place, okay? There weren't a whole
yeah.
bunch of tubes going to it. So it was, you know, but it was looking around. It was making coherent sentences, and oh, yeah,
yeah.
crazy fun.
those films. Those are more your science films. I don't really know. Oh, you know, there was a movie I did want to bring up, and I don't know if you've seen this. It has, I don't know that it would fit into Gods and Monsters so much as to the religious aspect. There's a very good early 50s science fiction film called Red Planet Mars. Have you ever seen it?
Red Planet Mars. It sounds familiar. It sounds like...
Oh, get your hands on a copy if you can. It is very interesting in how...
Was this one made in Russian? No, wait.
No, this was made in the United States.
Oh, okay.
But there were parts of it that were filmed, quote-unquote, in Russia. It takes portions of it take place in Russia. And
Peter Graves is in it. Okay.
Yes, a very young Peter Graves. And there is a very interesting religious aspect in the film where there's concerns among the religious on Earth about these messages coming from space.
Right.
And I think the conflict between it, there's a underlying conflict between science fiction and religion in this movie, but handled very, very tactfully and very, very well, so as to not, I think, insult or not include anyone of any sort of thought, whether you're, you know, a believer in a deity or not.
Right.
So it was really, really well done, and which is pretty surprising for an early 1950s film in a very conservative time in American history.
Very conservative. The neckties, wore neckties. if that could be said.
Yeah,
there was. There was a thing of thought that I had. That goes back, I don't remember how many years. What if aliens, if UFOs, if little green men or big green men or little green women? What if we are ever visited? This planet is ever visited by extraterrestrial life from another place. It went from their place to this place and said, "You guys got any gray poupon?" or whatever they do.
Yeah.
That it will undermine religion that says we are the only things alive in the universe.
With a soul, yeah.
with the soul.
Yeah, it will. If that happens, some religions change and because facts force them to accept certain realities. Look at Christianity and in particular Catholicism. I can speak to that to somewhat degree. I used to be Catholic. Now I'm nothing. But but I mean, it has evolved since its inception. I believe a lot of them, and that's where you get different sects of different religions and things like that. I think certain groups of people rely on different thought or accept realities before others. It was once blasphemous to accept the fact that the earth is round and is not the center of the universe.
And I think it had to be the voice of the church at that point coming and going like, no, we'll accept it. And then and only then was it accepted. But until they...
There was a time, yeah.
Until they blew smoke up a chimney or they came out with a proclamation, then that was just wrong. And that was... It was not just wrong in their eyes, but if you thought it, you were wrong. And if you spoke of it, you were wrong. And they would just kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... There wasn't a whole
stone
lot of...
Stone the leper. Stone the leper.
Yeah, you know. But he's got a test tube, and he's got some answers. Stone him. So that's another one.
You're messing with
Red
the collection
Planet
basket now.
Too.
Let's not do... We're not going to accept that if it's going to mess with the collection basket. No. That's not...
Oh, no. Yeah, exactly. We need to put up a tent. And then give us 6 weeks, we'll have a building. Then we need another tent. Then we need another building. We're going to do this. See, I mean, if anybody figured out the value of real estate, I really think it was a certain group of body of people that were like, we need real estate. Because does God need real estate? Really? Really?
I don't know. There's been cultures that don't understand the concept of real estate and ownership of dirt. It's everybody's dirt.
Yeah. It's everybody's dirt until you can figure out a way to tax it.
That's
and
right.
then, there you go.
There's ownership.
Yeah. So.
And all the fun, all the responsibilities that come with it. Funny you should say that. My son just bought a house. I'm helping him move in and change locks and things like that. Had a fun day today, but
so you're changing the locks on your house so it won't come back, right? Is it
exactly? What the hell do you think?
Just clarifying.
No, I envy him. It's an exciting time. I'm going to be stuck where I'm at for some time. I fear.
Yeah.
And you know, being an empty nester now, the daughter's away at college, so she's not really here except in the summer to mooch.
Right.
Now, as long as she's in college,
that's why it's there. But yeah.
As long as you're in college, it ain't mooching. After that, get a job, get out. No.
Get a job.
You don't have to get out if you're paying rent.
Right.
I don't know. I'm glad in a way, our conversations about religion inspired me to do this show. It's neat how, again, the different fantastic creatures that were imagined so long ago are still exciting on film today.
And they reinforce religion. They really do. They support the stories. They support the mythos and create amazing morality plays that say if you stay on the right path, you will overcome whatever monster is put before you. Maybe by the same God that you're sitting there saying thanks to. He might send you a monster and go, you take care of it. Just to see you overcome morality. And whoa!
Well, that about wraps up bonus time, my friend. Thanks for calling.
All right.
It.
Yeah, it was my pleasure, sir.
It was fun.
Dale,
you certainly enhanced the show. I appreciate your insights and viewpoints. It's
cool. So I will go back on my shelf.
And I'll be back next week.
Shelf. With the rib injury.
The blast.
Thanks so much, sir.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week on Eerie House Radio. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.